the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey, good morning, and thanks for joining us today here on AgNet West Farm City Newsday, starting off today's show with a California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News report. Tariffs as a result of trade disputes with China are continuing to impact a range of California farm products. In particular, tree nuts and wine still face increased duties despite last year's implementation of the Phase 1 U.S.-China trade agreement. Meanwhile, tariffs on farm products have been suspended for exports to Europe under an interim agreement between the U.S. and the European Union. Moving right along into today's program headlines, Brian German is talking with us about uncertainty happening at our ports, making the fresh fruit industry to make tough decisions. We've got another episode of the Making Sense of Biologicals campaign today, talking all about using a fear effect to combat aphid populations. And before we hear those reports, I'm starting off today's program with ways to stay vigilant against rural crime. Let's jump right in. Rural crime tends to pick up as harvest season kicks into gear. Bruce Blodgett, executive director for San Joaquin County Farm Bureau, says thieves will go after commodities, tools, heavy equipment, gas and oil, and much more.
You look at fuel prices. Fuel is obviously a very popular item for theft right now. When metal prices go up, the copper wire starts disappearing from the pumps. Again, you mentioned harvest season. We got a lot of people moving around, a lot of equipment out and about in fields and in remote locations that isn't always there, and it provides opportunities. So just having people be vigilant and watch out for their equipment, bring that in to the extent possible, secure it. You can't bring it in because if it's not bolted down, it seems like people are trying to walk away with it.
He says having a good relationship with your county law enforcement, installing cameras, locking up when possible, and even marking your equipment helps to prevent theft and locate stolen items. Stay tuned to AgNet West and this radio station as we continue to provide you with coverage on this topic. But for now, let's take a listen to these back-to-back reports with AgNet West's Brian German.
The congestion at West Coast ports continues to be an ongoing struggle, which is becoming even more problematic for the fresh fruit industry. There have been various issues disrupting the flow of goods in and out of California over the past year. The problems have become particularly challenging over the past 6 to 8 months. California Fresh Fruit Association President Ian LeMay explained that the uncertainty at the ports is causing some producers to make some tough decisions.
Yes, we've been aware of this issue since the beginning of the calendar year. The difference today is that our commodities are coming off the tree, coming off the vine, and we have to make a decision on whether to send those commodities to premium markets overseas or to retain them and process them through our domestic channels. And the unfortunate element that we're seeing now is that the uncertainty that we see in sending our fruit to port and then overseas is there is no certainty. And thus, our members are having to make difficult decisions to either take that uncertainty and the risk associated with sending fruit to port and overseas, or having to transition and, you know, repurpose some of our traditional domestic retail relationships to put that product into market. This is not something holistically that the government can fix. They are focusing on it, but I would say from my member standpoint, we need a doubling down of focus. We need to try to find a way to expedite the daily tasks that are happening at the ports. And we need to also identify that as Californians, as Americans, we continue to grow, pick, pack, and ship a high demand product that is wanted globally. And so we have to have the functionality through our ports to get our commodities to those places, or else we're going to start to fall behind. And so we are engaging our members of Congress. We're engaging the Biden administration. They understand that this is an issue. Unfortunately, it's not an issue that's going to get fruit further through the port tonight. And so the industry is working through those challenges, but it's unfortunate that we're here.
Researchers are looking into the potential of using a fear effect to help control aphid populations. In the latest Making Sense of Biologicals episode, Sarah Herman from Penn State University highlighted the work they're doing to measure the value of using the smell of predators for managing aphids.
When we typically think about predatory insects, we're thinking about them consuming pests that we want to be removed from our crop systems. But predators can also influence prey behavior and physiology by effectively scaring them. And so when prey detect the presence of their predators, they change their behavior and physiology in an attempt to avoid being being eaten. And so we want to see in the lab if we can harness that fear effect or that response to a threat to sort of effectively disrupt the behaviors that these aphid pests do that harm crop plants.
The research team has identified certain compounds that appear to be scaring aphids in the lab results, which can provide several benefits.
The aphids are repelled by these odor cues, and we see that in their host plant preference for predator-free plants. We also find that they're just not colonizing areas where we have these odors present. And we also see that when they're in the presence of these odor cues, that they reduce their reproductive output. And they also induce wing formation in the next generation. So a mom aphid that was exposed to these cues has fewer babies, but the babies that she does produce will have wings when they become adults. So there's lots of different changes, and all of the ones that I just mentioned could be potentially beneficial for the crop plants, because aphid feeding is what causes the biggest problem, in addition to their exponential growth in terms of their population growth. And so if we could effectively limit the amount that are being produced, and of the ones that are produced, get them to want to leave the field, then that could cause a net benefit.
To listen to the full version of this Making Sense of Biologicals episode, head to agnetwest.com. I'm Brian German for Agnet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian. And we'll hear more about using predatory smells to manage aphid populations a little later on in the show with a full episode of the Making Sense of Biologicals installment. Right now, it is time for us to head out for a short break. We'll be right back with more of the day's national headlines and local reports, including our livestock report from Randall Wiseman, when we return. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds.
Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley State and Nation and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money. With increasing water scarcity, ask Wild Eye's qualified staff about their simple, easy-to-install and use monitoring systems to help you keep track of your precious water resources and also be SGMA compliant. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today online at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. In today's national headline, sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. The Department of Agriculture announced Coronavirus Food Assistance Program 2, or CFAP 2, funds for contract livestock producers and specialty crop growers. CFAP 2 assists producers who faced market disruptions in 2020 due to COVID-19. USDA announced $1 billion is available through the program to contract producers of eligible livestock and poultry for revenue losses in 2020. USDA expanded coverage to include chickens, poultry eggs, turkeys, hogs and pigs, ducks, geese, pheasants and quail, including eligible breeding stock and eggs of all eligible poultry types produced under contract. USDA now also allows contract producers to use eligible revenue from 2018 or 2019 to prove losses compared with 2020 revenue. USDA also announced it is amending the CFAP 2 payment calculation for several commodities by allowing farmers to substitute 2018 sales for 2019 sales. Sign up for CFAP 2 was reopened in March and remains open. All new and modified CFAP 2 applications are due by October 12th. These headlines are brought to you by NAFB and sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Now back to the show.
You're listening to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Randall Wiseman with today's livestock report.
Well, in today's livestock news, if you're wondering what the market effects of the current gradual downsizing of the beef cattle herd might be, Gary Crawford has a story to help answer that question.
The nation's beef cattle industry, buffeted last year by COVID-related slowdowns in processing, this year by rapidly rising feed costs, will be cutting back on the size of the herd. In fact, USDA chief economist Seth Meyer says the industry is
already in a contraction phase in the cattle cycle and maybe deeper than we expected.
And so for this year, USDA cutting its previous projections for beef output by 30 million pounds down to about 27.9 billion pounds. But next year, production could fall to about 26.9 billion.
Which is why in this report, you saw some support for cattle prices.
And indeed, USDA Outlook Board Chairman Mark Chekanowski says his analysts raised this year's forecast for average steer prices by $2 a hundredweight up to $121.18.
And for 2022, we raised it even further to $126.25 per hundredweight.
So a 3% drop from this year in beef production, bringing a 4% hike in cattle prices next year. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Thanks, Gary. And USDA Outlook Board Chairman Mark Chekanowski also gives the latest forecast for U.S. meat production and meat exports.
Total meat production nearly unchanged year over year. So for 2021, we're forecasting 106.82 billion pounds. And for 2022, we're forecasting 106.85 billion pounds. So up just slightly. And then in terms of total meat trade, total meat exports are forecast at 18.93 billion pounds for 2021. And for 2022, they're forecasted 8.662 billion pounds. And that would be a year-over-year decrease of 268 million pounds.
Again, that was USDA Outlook Board Chairman Mark Chekanowski. Well, we told you yesterday that USDA had announced the establishment of a $400 million dairy donation program. Under the DDP, eligible dairy organizations will partner with nonprofit feeding organizations that distribute food to individuals and families in need. But Deputy Agriculture Secretary Jill Brunel explains what she sees as the benefits of the newly announced DDP.
The benefits of the dairy donation program are threefold. It reduces food waste, make sure farmers are paid for the milk they produce, and provide nutritious dairy products to American families. The goal is to facilitate timely dairy product donations at times when traditional purchase programs don't move quickly enough. When there is surplus milk production, we're encouraging the milk to be donated instead of losing milk to loss and waste.
Under the DDP, eligible dairy organizations will partner with nonprofit feeding organizations that distribute food to individuals and families in need. Program details are available on the AMS website, ams.usda.gov. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
Thanks, Randall. And in more agriculture news, USDA to host a roundtable with a focus on food waste solutions. A virtual roundtable discussion on food waste solutions is to be held next month. The discussion will showcase innovative policies and approaches that have been successful in reducing food waste across the United States, Europe, and the United Kingdom. USDA's Food Loss and Waste Liaison, Jean Busby, said in a statement, quote, "Food loss and waste reduction is an international priority. The United Nations has set a goal to cut food waste in half by 2030, as well as reduce food loss earlier in the supply chain." Busby added, "The United States also has a national goal to reduce food loss and waste by 2030. It's important to share the work of the people and organizations who make this goal a reality in their communities." Busby will be a speaker at the event. A few other speakers include Emily Broad-Lieb of Harvard Food Law and Policy Clinic, Josh Kelly of Vermont State Waste Management and Prevention Division, who will discuss the state's universal recycling law and consumer food waste education efforts. Also a speaker is Sarah Fatih of San Diego Food System Alliance to highlight an online social competition that has engaged residents in food waste tracking challenges and reduced household-level food waste by 38%. The September 15th virtual discussion is free to attend, but those interested must register. You can visit www.usda.gov/foodlossandwaste for more information. And it's that time where we head out for a short break. We'll be right back with more of the day's agriculture news and farm features when we return. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's ficoterra.com/almonds.
Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley State and Nation and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money. With increasing water scarcity, ask Wild Eye's qualified staff about their simple, easy-to-install and use monitoring systems to help you keep track of your precious water resources and also be SGMA compliant. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today online at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, sustainable agriculture. Welcome back to Farm City News Day by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. For today's interview segment, we're taking a listen to another installment of our Making Sense of Biologicals campaign. This episode talks all about using a fear effect to combat aphid populations. Let's take a listen.
Welcome to another episode of the Making Sense of Biologicals campaign, a new weekly series that will take a dive into various topics with unbiased experts in the field of biologics. This episode is made possible by PureCrop One, an all-organic formula for when you just want one tool that does it all. An insecticide, fungicide, biostimulant, and super surfactant containing only 7 plant-based ingredients. PureCrop One is naturally safe for the planet, humans, animals, and even beneficial insects. For more information, visit purecropone.com. Assistant Professor of Arthropod Ecology and Trophic Interaction in the Department of Entomology at Penn State University, Sarah Herman is with us today to talk about some interesting research using scent to repel aphids. So let's just start with what this research is looking at and, in particular, what you're hoping to achieve.
So in my lab, we're studying insect behavior. And so because I'm really interested in predator-prey interactions in particular, one thing that we're trying to do is to figure out if we can enhance biological control in sort of this unique way. So when we typically think about predatory insects, we're thinking about them consuming the prey or the pests that we want to be removed from our crop systems. But predators can also influence prey behavior and physiology by effectively scaring them. And so when prey detect the presence of their predators, they change their behavior and physiology in an attempt to avoid being eaten. And so we want to see in the lab if we can harness that fear effect or that response to a threat to sort of effectively disrupt the behaviors that these aphid pests do that harm crop plants.
Very good. And now looking at some of the data from the research, it looks like you've been able to isolate some of those compounds or scents. So which of these seem to have the most promise in your work so far?
When we first embarked on this, we wanted to first be sure that these aphids could detect the odors from the predators. So we started simply by giving them a choice between a plant that harbored these natural enemies, these lady beetles, and between that and a plant that did not have lady beetle predators. And so we found that they will choose without visual cues, just with odor cues, the plant that does not have their predators, which isn't really surprising because that's going to be a safer choice for them in terms of being eaten. And so when we were able to say that, yes, this seems like an odor cue that is allowing for these prey aphids to eavesdrop on their predators and make these decisions to avoid being eaten, we wanted to figure out exactly what the odors were. So a postdoc in the lab, Jess Kansman, has been essentially extracting the odor space, the headspace, volatiles, so the chemical compounds that these lady beetles produce on a regular basis, running it through a GCMS where we can then see each individual compound that is being produced. And so what she found is that they produce a ton of compounds, but there are 3 that we've been working on in the lab in particular, and they're all methoxypyrazines. These are really sort of pungent plant-like odors. And so we've been mainly looking at those 3 in the lab in the field so far, but we have some of the other candidate compounds that Jess is now looking into, and we're going to be refining this sort of blend or ode to lady beetle to try to make it the most effective at disrupting aphid behavior in the field.
And when you talk about the disruption of behavior, what does that mean? Are the aphids just avoiding these areas, or are there other effects these compounds seem to be having on aphid physiology?
Yeah, absolutely. So the aphids are repelled by these odor cues, and we see that in their host plant preference for predator-free plants. We also find that they're just not colonizing areas where we have these odors present. And we also see that when they're in the presence of these odor cues, that they reduce their reproductive output. So they have fewer babies. And they also induce wing formation in the next generation. So a mom aphid that was exposed to these cues has fewer babies, but the babies that she does produce will have wings when they become adults, which is an investment in dispersal related to experiencing a stressor. So there's lots of different changes, and all of the ones that I just mentioned could be potentially beneficial for the crop plants, because aphid feeding is what causes the biggest problem, in addition to their exponential growth in terms of their population growth. And so if we could effectively limit the amount that are being produced, and of the ones that are produced, get them to want to leave the field, then that could cause a net benefit.
And now, looking at this from an agricultural perspective, with the work that you're doing, how might this potentially be deployed in farming systems?
Yeah, so right now we are using essential oil diffusers to do our field trials. And it's not the perfect way to diffuse these odors, but it does work. Once we have good field findings that we can present and bring to farmers and say, hey, this looks like it's working, can we do an on-farm trial? Then we'll start to refine these diffusers. And we're going to be working with industry partners that have decades and decades of experience making diffusers for things like mating disruption or herbivore-induced plant volatiles that are already to some degree used in agriculture. So we're leaning on that technology that exists to sort of enhance our new idea. And so that's coming hopefully in the next year or so as we wrap up these field trials this summer, look at those data, and are able to really have a definitive answer about what happens in the field. Is it the same as we're finding in the lab?
Yeah, and that leads me to my last question here. Looking at the lab results so far and now looking ahead, what's the plan for the next step in the research? You mentioned some work with farmers and maybe getting this into some test fields, but what are the next steps in this process?
Our next step is, just like you said, getting out into the field and scaling up this research to understand if it's influencing aphids in this positive way for crop plants out there in the fields where farmers need it. And farmers have been really, really excited and positive about this idea. I've been trialing a different product that's a different predatory insect odor with collaborators at Cornell, and the farmers that we've been working with have been completely wonderful. And so I'm really encouraged by that experience, bringing this lady beetle odors out to the field in the near future. One thing that we need to do as we're doing these field trials and a major future direction in the lab is to understand what else we could be influencing by having these odors out there. So we know that when we go out to the field or our backyard, we're not seeing just lady beetles and aphids. There's a suite of herbivores that will be feeding on those plants. In addition, there are also lots of natural enemies, both predatory insects and parasitoids, that are out in the open field. And there's also pollinators. We need to understand how the community is responding to these odors being out there, because we don't want to, you know, effectively remove the pressure from aphids, but then cause a different problem. So this is something that we'll be working on as we bring this out into the farmscape, to understand the community interactions that are potentially impacted by placing this out into the field. And what our hope is, if we have maybe multiple predator odor cues, we could use those all as repellents to effectively push different types of pests out, but then have maybe an attractive crop or supporting crops for natural enemies or other beneficial insects adjacent. So as a pool, potentially, to bring in some really good insects to the field. So we're hoping to sort of have this integrated approach that doesn't just use maybe these repellents, these predatory insect odors, but uses all of the knowledge that we have from literature and other researchers to really have a great opportunity for these farmers.
Very good. Again, Sarah Herman with Penn State University. Thanks so much for taking the time with us today and sharing some of your results with this interesting area of research.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for being excited.
Again, this has been another installment of the Making Sense of Biologicals campaign, a series to help spread the understanding of the biologics field with unbiased experts. And again, this episode was made possible by Pure Crop One, an all-organic formula for when you just want one tool that does it all. An insecticide, fungicide, biostimulant, and super surfactant containing containing only 7 plant-based ingredients. For more information, visit purecrop1.com.
Again, that was the latest episode of the Making Sense of Biologicals campaign. If you'd like to take a listen to this episode again, you can always head on over to our website, www.agnetwest.com, for more information. Right now, it's time for us to head out for a short break. We'll be right back with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds.
WildEye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley State and Nation and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money. With increasing water scarcity, ask WildEye's qualified staff about their simple, easy-to-install and use monitoring systems to help you keep track of your precious water resources and also be SGMA compliant. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on WildEye. Visit them today online at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. In today's national headline, sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. The Environmental Protection Agency released new resources to address adverse effects of nutrient pollution in waters, including algae blooms. The three new resources will help EPA's co-regulators and partners better protect waters from the effects of nutrient pollution. The three resources include the agency's final recommended nutrient criteria for lakes and reservoirs, a web-based tool with information and tracking of harmful algae blooms. EPA has published revised recommended ambient water quality criteria under the Clean Water Act to help address nutrient pollution in lakes and reservoirs. EPA says the new criteria will help protect drinking water sources, recreational uses, and aquatic life in our nation's lakes and reservoirs. EPA has also published a new ArcGIS story map that will allow the public to learn about and track reported cyanobacteria in fresh waters across the country. Finally, the EPA has published a final technical support document for co-regulators, such as states, territories, and tribes, to protect swimmers from 2 cyanobacterial toxins produced by harmful algae blooms. These headlines are brought to you by NAFB and sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Brian German with more local news.
Exports of American wine reached a value of nearly $1.3 billion last year. According to the Wine Institute, a total of 95% of U.S. wine exports come from California. Wine exports reached $1.29 billion in winery revenues, shipping 41.9 million cases last year. While the total volume of wine exports was up a little over 1%, value came down by 6.4% compared to 2019. Several factors impacted the export numbers for 2020, most notably the COVID-19 pandemic, but also tariffs and trade agreements, along with the strength of the dollar. Using information from Trade Data Monitor, it was determined that the most substantial markets for U.S. wine were Canada, the United Kingdom, and the European Union. The Wine Institute remains committed to expanding market opportunities for U.S. wines, with a goal of surpassing $7.5 billion in export sales by 2030. While volume and value of exports to Japan fell in 2020, there is optimism that levels can rebound to pre-pandemic numbers moving forward. Asia still represents tremendous opportunities for U.S. wines. While on-premise consumption dropped across the overall market, Korea actually showed the strongest growth of any market last year, with sales value increasing 85%. With exports to China and Hong Kong rebounding, there is an expectation for continued growth in 2021. Wine Institute's California Wine Export Program is a public-private partnership sponsored by winery contributions and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, supporting more than 185 California wineries exporting to 142 countries. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. Get even more connected by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching at AgNet West, and our team of Brian German at Brian German AgNet West and Danielle Leal with at D Leal AgNet West. This has been Farm City Newsday by AgNet West.